Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's wonderful to have your company for another episode of the show. Now today I'm talking to Danielle Levy, and Danielle and I are talking all about the role of the integrator. Now the integrator is a term that comes from a book called Traction. And of course, a more common term for that would be chief operating officer. And in dentistry, we might even use the word practice manager. But in this conversation, we talk a lot about the stages of growth of a business, what the role of the practice manager or integrator might be, how to develop those skills in there, and what the relationship is like between the practice manager and the owner of the business. Now, whether you're a dentist that wants to stay on the tools and just do dentistry, but do the dentistry that you love and more of it, or maybe you're the type of dentist who wants to get off the tools and be the CEO of the business, this conversation is going to be really important, because if you want to build a business that takes you towards your goals, you want to have a team around you. And of course, having that right-hand person is critical to your success. And in this conversation, we talk about a bunch of things that will help you on that journey. So there's a couple of resources that Danielle mentioned on the podcast. And the first one is called the Blind Spot Identifier. And the second one is a guide to delegating better. And so I'm going to put those links in the show notes. So all you need to do is come across to the SavvyDentist.com website, find the episode, we'll put these links in the show notes. And so download those resources and they'll help you on your journey as well. So for now, let's get into our conversation with Danielle. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I enjoyed recording it. Here she is. Danielle Levy, thank you so much for taking the time to come and join us on the Savvy Dentist Podcast. And you're coming to us all the way from Boston. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
It's great to get to meet you. And I've been looking forward to this conversation for quite some time. Danielle, you've got a really interesting process that you help people with and work with people about bringing operations into place. And I've read a lot of your material on your website and some of the other resources there. And you really are that integrator type of person, almost like a COO who helps bring order and structure to business. And I'm curious to understand how you found your way into that role, because I would imagine that when you were a little girl growing up, you probably maybe didn't kind of go, you know what, I'm going to be an integrator one day. That sounds like a thing I'll put on my career form. And so I wondered if we could just explore what an integrator really is, what a COO does, and why that's important, but specifically how you got to that point in your life to, you know, go down that path.
Sure. So I had a very successful corporate career in some of the most popular agencies, digital agencies here in the Boston area, just the most sought after places to work for that were doing the best design work, the best ad agency work, just the best of the best. And I got really, and I did that for nearly 20 years, and I got really burnt out, and I went to graduate school, and I had a milestone birthday. And I said, I'm so tired. I've been working all the time. I need to do something fun. My girlfriends, I had a couple of them lined up, and they all couldn't make it for one reason or another. And I said, well, I'm going to go on this adventure alone. And I ended up in the Midwestern part of the country at what was much like a summer camp for adults. But what I didn't realize was that they're women only. They were some of the biggest influencers in the online space that were there on a retreat as well. There I was to just celebrate a birthday. And I'm so thankful that I didn't know who these other guests were, because I would have been incredibly intimidated by them. And over 5 days of rock climbing and arts and crafts and all sorts of camp things, I got to know these people. And by the end of it, I had a great network there that launched the part two of my career. And I always just think, what like an incredible thing that happened to me, right? Like, I'm an introverted person who took a chance on a birthday, and came out the other side with all of the possibilities. Encourage people to do the same, right? Like, yeah, just take those chances, right?
It sounds like a real sliding doors moment.
Yeah, it really was. And really, it was just about taking all those skills that I had and just transferring them kind of into just another playground, I guess, is the best way to explain it. And so my background is very much in project management. I've been a director of marketing operations. I've been a director of project management, really worked my way up all the different agencies. So it was just a very transferable set of skills for me.
And your background, though, is you grew up in a dental family as well. So you've got that wonderful ability to kind of cross-pollinate those skills and understand how they apply to dentistry. So tell us a bit about your family upbringing. You know, Dad was a dentist. Did you grow up helping Dad around the place? What was that like?
Yeah, no, I definitely did. I grew up just around dentistry, when the molds would come in the mail over to the house, and when the sample packs would come with all the new toothbrushes or flavors of sugarless gum or, you know, whatever it was, they was always getting flooded over to the house. The American Dental Society was always sending their magazines. And I just thought, how funny to take like all of these photos and just, you know, leave them around the house. And then as I got older, you know, those were my first jobs growing up, being the receptionist, learning how to file the insurance claims, doing sort of all of that front desk sort of stuff. And my dad only retired within the last, I don't know, a couple of years or so. So it's just always been something that I've been very aware of.
It's really interesting because in dentistry, as I'm sure you're aware, we see lots of dentists who kind of get really involved in the arts and crafts of dentistry, and they love the hands-on clinical work. We see people that just fascinate about the latest materials and the latest technology and how they can do their particular procedures better. And then we see another cohort of dentists who love running the business, and they really enjoyed their clinical work for a while, but they also are happy to kind of step back from that and run the business. And I guess there's not just two different, A or B options. There's obviously a spectrum along there as well. I wanted to ask you, when it comes to dental practices and what you've seen with your dad and beyond and other industries, what are the common mistakes that you see going on from an operational point of view or from a systems point of view or what, just a general business point of view? What are the things you observe and you think, if I could whisper in their ear, this is what I'd want to tell them?
Sure. I think most businesses originate out of some type of a passion project or passion, area of education or something like that. And I think what I would whisper to those founders is to really spend some time self-reflecting on what brings them joy and where they feel like they can make the greatest impact. And I don't think it's for me or anyone to say whether, dentist or any entrepreneur should choose to be more hands-on and in the art of what they're doing or choose to be in the seat of the CEO. I think the mistake would be trying to do both and doing both and thinking that you can do both well, rather than surrounding yourself with systems and process and people that can help you make your greatest impact in whichever lane that might be.
I think that's really, really good advice. And one of the things I often see is you see dentists trying to wear both hats, and you see what I call dentistry by day, CEO by night kind of methodology. And that's just a recipe for burnout. I've seen it a lot of times, and it's hard to juggle. It's almost impossible to juggle, but I really appreciate you saying that it's not up to any one of us to decide what the right path is for an individual, because there's many ways to be right, and it's about what brings you joy. So what actually is an integrator? Because it's a phrase that perhaps some people won't be familiar with. I know it's come from work of traction and the EOS system and so on like that. But could you just, for the purposes of this audience, explain what an integrator is, what they do, what their day-to-day responsibilities involve, and why that might be useful for a dental practice?
Sure. So I simplify the definition to basically being the person that runs the business of the business.
Yeah.
It's the person that sees that vision, doesn't come up with the vision, doesn't design the business, but can get their head around what that business is and knows how to really solidify the business foundations and then figure out, what are the plans for growth and scale to the extent that the visionary, who's the counterpart to the integrator, wants the business to go.
And so on a day-to-day basis, what does that look like on a day-to-day basis?
I actually reverse engineer it is the way that I do it. I look at my business owners and the CEOs, and I say, what are the things that they need to be doing that only they can do in their role, whether it's the dentistry itself or whether it's being the CEO and doing only the CEO things. And then everything else falls to the integrator to figure out how to get it done. And that doesn't mean that the integrator is responsible for the doing. It's just that the integrator is responsible for making sure that it gets done.
I had a background in the Navy many years ago, actually, Danielle, and it's really interesting. When I was on the ships traveling around doing dentistry, which is a great fun exercise, it was fantastic. And I was very lucky to be at sea during the two Gulf Wars. So it was a bit more booze crews than Navy, but it was a lot of fun. But what was really interesting was the roles on the ships. And you know, on the ship, you've got the captain of the ship who sets the strategy and the direction and, you know, is in charge of the mission, so to speak. And then the second in charge is really the executive officer. And the executive officer is responsible for running the heads of departments, making sure that the, you know, weapons team are doing what they need to be doing, the mechanical engineering team are doing what they need to be doing, supply and logistics and so on and so forth. And so I kind of wonder if there's a bit of a crossover or a metaphor that works the same as that, you know, that same sort of mentality. You've got your captain of the ship who's the visionary. You've got your integrator or the executive officer who makes sure that everything happens as it ought to. Do you see the word integrator and COO as interchangeable, or do you see those as different?
I actually think it depends on the business.
Okay.
I have been in many businesses, many online businesses, that it is interchangeable.
Yep.
The other instances where I have seen a true CEO come in is when it has gone beyond a single service offering. For example, I was working for, and I'll loop back around to your question, but I was working for a digital marketing agency that figured out that they needed to develop their own proprietary software. And it was actually quite critical to bring in the COO to make sure that everything was aligned by bridging together the software and the agency together. And I think something like that in that instance was greater than what an integrator would handle. I think there can be a need for both. And I think there can be a single person that can do it really well. It just depends on the instance.
No, that makes sense.
But I did want to get back to what you were saying earlier about the captain of the ship. And I thought it was a brilliant analogy. And what I loved about what you had said is you had said that the captain of the ship defines the mission. And I think that's so true. CEOs define mission, they define values, they set the tone for the culture. And I've never heard that analogy before with the ship, but it was just so absolutely spot on to way that I think businesses need to be run. Thank you for giving me that perspective.
I wanted to just shift gear for a second and talk about the natural stages of growth of a business. You've obviously got, you know, some fairly well-defined stages of growth, you know, launch, then a period of growth and development, then perhaps a period of scale, and a period of maturity, and maybe even exit at the end of the life cycle there. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the common problems that occur in each of those stages of growth. And the reason I'm asking you that is because, again, in dental practice, you would have seen it in your father's practice, of course, is that a lot of people think that a dental practice is, you know, it's a dental practice, therefore it's not a business, but it follows very similar principles and processes that a normal business would follow. And, you know, what happens in other businesses happens exactly the same in dentistry. And this myth that we're somehow different, I think, is just that, a myth. And so I'd like to just ask you about those stages of growth. Any particular challenges that you see or opportunities that you see at each of those stages? And again, the role of the integrator or operations manager in that you know, particular life cycle.
The analogy that I would use is a flight of stairs. As you're going, you know, up in the maturity of your business, you're rising up a little bit, you're experiencing that growth. But I think the problematic step is that most companies don't slow down on that flat baseboard, where they pause and they reset what their new foundation is before they take the next step in their growth. And it's interesting because a lot of the companies that I work with, you know, one of the first things that we do is we try to stabilize the company. But what companies don't realize is when you've experienced a tremendous amount of growth, you actually then go ahead and break all of the processes and the procedures. And then you need to, you know, rebuild and, you know, establish that strong baseline again. So as exciting as it is to go from that immature phase to, you know, that high scale, you really need to pause in between each phase, restabilize, and then go ahead to the next step.
Why do you think people miss the pause? What's happening there?
The growth and the excitement and the concern for opportunity loss and oftentimes it's not until you look in your rear view, until they look in their rear view mirror to realize what has happened, that they realize that they should have paused, or the tremendous amount, the tremendous power of the trajectory that they've been put into.
In that particular area, obviously the main issue is, you know, not pausing. What sort of systems or processes or structures do you see starting to fray at the edges if you don't pause? Is it your operationals and your systems around how you do things? Is it your people part? Is it your marketing? What are the things that you traditionally see just come a bit unstuck?
Sure. So there's a couple of things. So one, I always encourage my CEOs to look at whether they're running the business or whether the business is running them. Because if they can't be proactive with the business, that probably means things have come unraveled. The other thing that I always keep a keen eye on is metrics of the business, whether it's number of patients that have been seen or number of hits to the website or what's going on social media or bottom line profitability or whatever the KPIs are that are in the business. If there are trends that are off from where that they should be, that means that something is broken and it needs to be diagnosed to figure out what is off track and how to get it back on track.
Yeah. Okay. I guess when I'm just having a few thoughts about practice managers and their role here. And one of the things that we often see, I don't know if it translates to the United States at all or not, but in Australia, we often see practice managers stepping into a role of practice, I suppose people step into the role of practice manager before they're really fully equipped to do it. And so typically you might see a young dental assistant who stays at the practice for a period of time, and for one reason or another, they end up working the front desk. And then all of a sudden they get these extra responsibilities thrown at them, and they're now officially the practice manager, but without any particular training and skills. One of the things I wanted to ask you is about how to grow an integrator. Is it better to grow an integrator, or is it better to hire an integrator or COO versus growing an integrator in, you know, through the business, having them come up through the ranks? And specifically, do you see any difference between a practice manager and an integrator? Because again, you're familiar with the dental world. Where do you see those critical shortfalls between practice manager and a true integrator?
I think it genuinely depends on the size of the practice and the person in the seat. What I would really, really caution against is a lot of times folks that are homegrown are more kind of like unicorn types, like Frankenstein, and they do all the things.
Yeah.
And that's where they're going to be spread too thin, and they're not going to know how to make their greatest impact. So I would say whether you hire from the outside or whether you have someone in-house, just make sure that they have a detailed job description, that they understand like what their performance indicators are, where they can make their greatest impact. And it's quite common, I think, when people are with a business for a really long time that, Susie Q will take care of it, or Tom Smith will take care of it. But really, again, to take those milestones to pause and reflect on, just because the person has been doing it or they used to know how to do the thing, doesn't mean that they should continue to do all of those things. And so most important to me is not whether it's an in-house person or whether it's someone else is brought in, but that there's a clear lane of responsibility so that they're not tasked too thin and not doing a whole lot of things not very well.
It's really interesting. Recently, I was asked to write some training for practice managers. The people that asked me to write the training, I said, oh, sure, well, just share with me some of the things you'd like me to cover on this particular training. And I got the laundry list of things to do. And I promise you, if I could find a person who could fulfill all those individual responsibilities on that list, I would hire them myself for a start.
Right. Yeah.
But they just don't exist, because they needed to be great at HR. They needed to be an HR manager, a CFO, a chief marketing officer, because they needed to know all the ins and outs of AdWords and Facebook ads, not to mention how to use graphic design tools. It's just like, wow, how do you expect one person to do all of that stuff? But anyway, that was a common perception in dentistry. You've got this one person who's meant to wear all these different hats, and I just don't think that exists.
And not only does it not exist, is that the quality of what they're producing in all of those different areas probably isn't as great as it should be. And from a cost perspective, you're paying more for some tasks that you should be able to pay less for. And you're probably paying more in time than someone that is more specialized in it, that can do it much faster with a greater amount of expertise.
Yeah, absolutely. So where do you see the CEO of the practice having to level up their skills, their knowledge, in order to grow as well? Because we all know that, you know, the growth of the CEO or the growth of the founder, you know, can either facilitate growth of the business or indeed it can limit growth of the business. So what are the common things that you see CEOs needing to grow and develop and understand as they go through that growth cycle as well?
I think the practices were probably found on that core dentistry service, right? Mm. And so the areas that I would imagine that the dentists need to grow the most in are what I would call like the front of the house activities, sales, marketing, public relations, visibility, you know, all of the things that will attract in additional practitioners, additional patients, maybe it's partners, supplementary services, whether it's like orthodontics or oral surgery or, you know, however you're partnering in your practice. And then all of those back of the house activities. You get quite an education in dentistry regarding the mouth and how to treat all of the different areas of health, oral health. But most dentists aren't getting a full education in legal, in HR, in finance, in all of in human resources, in people management, right? All of those back of the house activities. Mm. So I would really encourage, you know, practice founders to really think about, like we were talking about at the top of the conversation, do they want to be a CEO or do they want to be a practitioner and otherwise get help in the supporting areas by someone that's really trained in them?
Yeah. And I'm wondering, I mean, I know you've worked with lots of different businesses over the years and in a whole array of different industries. I'm wondering if you can just share some examples or some stories even about some of the journeys that these businesses have been on, some of the things that they had to sort out and encounter, but equally what happened or what was the outcome when they addressed those things and what did that mean for the individuals on the team, whether they be the CEO, the integrator or anyone else on the team. I'm just wondering from your experience, what have you seen?
Yeah, I think I spend a lot of time working with my CEOs on blind spots and just talking about, you know, blind spots are called blind spots because you don't see them coming. And how can we identify those areas of risk in a business so that hopefully we do see them coming? And I think just taking for granted some of the formalization that needs to happen in a practice, whether it's protecting IP or having contracts with staff members or, you know, really taking that extra step to make sure that things are super buttoned up. I've seen inadvertent mistakes or inadvertent lack of protection harm the companies that I've worked with in very, very significant ways. And so I just think it's very, very important to make sure that you understand, you know, how to represent your business to the outside world to protect your IP and your business.
And so once that was all done and everything was buttoned up, what did you see? Was it smooth operations? Was it greater profitability? Was it reduced stress levels for individuals? Was it clarity? What were the things that came out of all of that exercise?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's greater confidence in how to do business. I think a lot of process and procedure came out of it. Checks and balances are always super important, but also just protection of the revenue streams, right? Mm. You know, I was working with a CEO who had a full mastermind program of students. And one of the students essentially ripped off her program and published it as her own. And she did it as a very innocent thing. And this is what she learned. She was thinking it was a form of flattery, but it was a direct hit to the bottom line of my client, right? So for me, it's oftentimes, unfortunately, about mitigating risk that's detrimental to the business as much as it is streamlining and operationalizing and allowing additional growth.
Coming back to the integrator role, on your website, I was really interested to see your Colby score, your Enneagram, your DISC profile, and all those sorts of things. And I wanted to ask you, do you think integrators are born or do you think they're made?
Oh, that's an interesting question. You know what? I think if I had to guess, I think for me, it's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I think there's probably something to do with birth order there.
Where are you in the birth order?
Yeah.
Are you youngest?
First.
You're first. Oh, okay. There we go. All right.
Yep. But I also think I'm very much a product of the companies that I've come from.
Yeah.
Here in the States, we had the dot-com boom, like late 90s.
Yeah.
That was a real intense period of working. And it was real intense. But I'll tell you, I'm a better business person for it. And I've got a lot thicker skin for it. And it really forced me in my early 20s to be able to walk into a boardroom with a group of mainly businessmen that were significantly older than I was and have to command the room in a way to get things done. And that's been an invaluable, you know, experience for me. So
cool. The reason I'm asking is I wanted to understand the essential qualities or traits that go into making a great integrator, practice manager, COO, or whatever. I'm just wondering if you could identify some of the things that have allowed you to be really successful in that role. And for the people listening to this podcast, go, maybe I can find someone who's got, you know, some of these qualities. Maybe they won't have all of them, but again, as you say, not necessarily born or made, bit of both. But what are the essential ingredients that you think would, you know, at least give someone a starting point?
You need to have a curiosity to understand and a willingness to lead and be seen, but an open-mindedness to your team. And, you know, one of the biggest mindset shifts that I have made is when I started realizing that I was serving the company and that I wasn't serving the person that was signing my checks. Mm. And as soon as I made that shift, I was able to operate at a much higher level than I had been able to before that.
What was that mindset shift? What did that entail and what was the difference that it made?
Sure. So when I'm serving the business, I'm able to see the business and the decisions that need to get made for what they are. Mm. That means for me that I'm not always guessing or, you know, agreeing with the CEO who has asked for the thing. Yeah. Now, at the end of the day, am I the business owner? No, but it gives me the confidence to say, you know what? I think this is a better idea because of this, this, and this, or we should try exploring that, this, and the other thing, because my ultimate goal is to serve the business. When I've seen CEOs take shortcuts or when I've seen staff, you know, do some things that I'm not thrilled about, it's not about relationships anymore. It's about my job is, again, just to serve the business with the highest level of integrity.
And so can we just touch on the relationship that you would need to have with the CEO to have that degree of honesty and transparency? Because there'll be probably some practice managers listening to this show or, you know, integrators, COOs, who go, I get that. How do I create that relationship with the CEO so that I can be confident in myself to go, you know what, Mr. or Mrs. CEO or Miss CEO, I'm not sure that I agree with that for this and this reason, because that does take a bit of maturity and it does take a certain amount of confidence, emotional intelligence, but equally from the CEO's point of view, that takes a bit of trust, also emotional intelligence to create that space to do that. So I'm just curious to understand how you developed that relationship.
Well, I think there's two parts to what has kind of been wrapped into that question. I think there's the part of it to, you know, raise the concerns, raise the issues, and then there's the implementation of it. And yeah. I think there is the trust and the responsibility when it comes to the implementation. But for those people that are just starting out, I would be hard pressed to work for someone that if they knew that I was coming from a real true place for the business, that if they didn't want to create the space for me to be heard. Mm. And so for me, that's a misalignment of a position altogether. And certainly over time, the implementation piece comes in.
Got it. Cool. So, Danielle, we have traversed a few different topics today and we've covered a fair bit of stuff. And I'm just curious if you had one or two final words of wisdom for either the visionary CEO type person, the founder, or the integrator, COO, practice manager that might be listening today. Any words of wisdom for either of those groups or both of those groups that you think is going to really add some substance to their relationship, their impact, and the outcomes?
Yeah. So like it's mentioned in Traction, the book that we had referenced, you know, the visionary can't run the business without the integrator and the integrator can't run the business without the visionary. So, and I think it takes both parties to step slightly into the role of the other. And so I would really encourage both roles to look for their complementary partner. You know, I think most important for me is understanding always like clear mission, vision, values. And I think there isn't really most anything that can't be worked out or accomplished or figured out when you understand what that mission and the vision and values are for a company.
Ladies and gents, if you want to find out more about Danielle and her work, and I'd really encourage you to do that, please do head across to her website, daniellecelevy.com. Just remember to put the C in there, and you'll find a whole bunch of things on her website. You've got a great blog. There's, you know, things about your boardroom league and how to get in touch with you and so on. So for those who are interested in doing that, I'd really encourage you to do that, because I think what Danielle's sharing today is really critically important. I think if you're a founder of a business, you really need that right-hand person as a complement to yourself to really move the business forward. And whether you are a dentist that wants to stay on the tools or one that wants to get off the tools, having the right people around you is going to be critical to your success. And the old saying is, if you want to go fast, go on your own. But if you want to go far, go with others, is really, really true. And building a team around you with people like Danielle and others is going to be critical. So, Danielle, thank you again for taking the time to come and talk to us. Really interesting conversation, and I've enjoyed getting to know you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.